This is New Year's Day, January 1st, 1962. And this is the Pioneer Visiting Sick and Visiting Committee, Andrew Wick and Chairman.
We're out there visiting some old timers, and they're nice and cozy here.
Singing sweet.
And Ted Loftus come with us today, and he brought out the Christmas checks from the Pioneers.
Well, we just came out to give him a little Christmas cheer because we couldn't get out sooner. It was too damn cold for some of us fellas.
How you been behaving?
Well, fine. Thank you. Everything nice.
Christmas.
Everything good.
Down there in the cabin,
thank you, brother. Visitor, brother.
They got a lot of fuel, and I found them cutting wood like they did 40 years ago when we got out there.
We saw the wood today.
Now he was recording for Eagle Park.
Can't be warm.
Alex and Mr. Olson here send their greetings and their thanks to the Pioneers. And we hope they can come into some meetings pretty soon. You think you're going to be able to get in town to some of the meetings?
Yes, sir. We'll be meeting.
The first one now is on the 8th of January, next Monday, a week from today.
Well, we'll be there.
Alex, yeah. and also you, Olson, will you be coming in?
Yeah, I've been there.
Can you spin me a little yarn, Olson? Tell me why you was out here cutting wood.
Well, you know, we've got to have a little exercise. So I was out on the sawhorse and saw some wood. I was going to go out and get the moose.
Where was you last week when it got 60 below out here?
Out on the sawhorse. It was 60 below. It's kind of cold, you know, my feet getting cold. So I had to come in. I stayed out about 10 minutes and I went in the cabin for about a half an hour. Keep it going, you know, that way. And we have to have a little song once in a while, you know.
Can you play any music?
No.
No? Not even a saw? I heard you could play a saw.
I could play a saw.
You was going to tell me about some of your...
I did that last year.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What, do you think of some new ones?
No.
No?
I can't have some new ones.
Okay, I'll let you hear this then.
If Hurley had gone down to the Pioneer's home, where they have a nurse to get him out of bed, you know, and keep him moving so his muscles develop, I bet you that guy'd be walking around today. But he just lays in that duck again. You can't improve laying flat. Got to get up and keep fighting. If I decide I'm going to make muscle, I'm going to move. And if you do, you move. How do you do? Well, just laying in bed, he talks fairly well now. So you know, for quite a while, then you have a stroke hit and you don't talk very easily. Up in the ears. But now he talks fairly well. Understands? He's alert. God damn it, if they'd have got him up, you know, and make him move.
Don't move, huh?
No, I won't get out. There's nobody to get him out but his wife. She hasn't got out.
She doesn't have
to. No. But if he'd gone down to Sitka where they have a nurse,
sure.
Pull him out of that goddamn bed, you know, and say, come on, goddammit, I'll help you walk a little bit, you know. Every day gets a little further, a little further, and finally he can walk.
Sure, he could have walked.
Sure.
His father lay in the bed and he can't do nothing that way.
Your muscles just dry up. And
he has a hand that sounds like the same kind of hand.
But
he's trying to work easy. Himself. Easy to both of these things.
Trying to get up and go around. Some of it may never come back. But
okay, we're going to get ready to leave after a little visit here with Olson and Alex. And you got any more to say, Alex?
Well, thank you, brother. We see you again in the meeting.
And he's coming to the meeting.
Yes. I wish you a happy new year, everybody.
This is Mr. Olson. Okay. Well, Andy and Ted and I are going to start out for another visit.
Tell hello, our brother. Tell her hello.
Alex says hello to all the brothers.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, boy. Everybody. Okay. And thank you for a Christmas present. Thank you, me and Sam.
January 1st, New Year's Day, and this is Pioneer Chicken Visiting Committee visiting an Eskimo family out here in the new part of Fairbanks. There's Frank Young and Andy Wicken and Harry Hughes. What is your name?
Reuben Tusak from Point Barrow.
What's the baby's name?
I don't know. I forgot his name.
Stephen Lee.
Stephen Lee? And what is your name, son?
Joe.
Joe. And the what's his name? You give me his name.
I'm good.
Right. Udaho. And he's from where?
Beaver.
And the lady?
Cora Jock.
Cora?
Right.
Yeah. And you're from Beaver, too?
No. Wainwright. Long time.
Wainwright, huh?
And
you're from where?
Barrow.
Point Barrow.
Come to Chalk. From Colville, most.
From Colville. All right, now this boy here's going to give us a little music and sing a little song for us.
Baseball game there.
Recording. You
will get it there?
Mm-hmm.
I want to play. Love time.
Wish you all a Happy New Year and everything good.
Hey, let them hear that now.
Yeah, I will.
This was a second visiting committee from Igloo 4 on New Year's Day, January the 1st, 1962. This was Andrew Wicken, Frank Young, and Harry Hughes visit to Eskimo Village in the new location just outside of Fairbanks on 23rd and Lathrop Street. It was very interesting to hear this native boy play this guitar. I think he's an excellent musician and a good singer. This is Harry Hughes, Igloo 4.
This little verse is entitled A True Pioneer as I Found Him. An adventurer, a person with industry, ambitious to create, develop, and progress for the benefit of himself and those people like himself, a home and a life of freedom, honesty, and helpfulness. He is also a person of individualism, a person who will go out of his way to help anyone in trouble that needs and wants his help or advice. He is also a person who never stops trying. He may forgive, but can never forget a wrong. He is a person that belongs to no organization or clique, but respects the other person, his right to his beliefs and thoughts, and his independence. This is the creed and the breed, the heritage of a pioneer of the Yukon and the territory of Alaska. He is he of the thousands of adventurers who came to the far north. He is one of the very few to call Alaska home and wrest a good, clean living from the virgin country.
Just the way the Creator made this land, the gold is in its sunsets, the silver is in its clouds, Its life is in its green of spring and summers, and its food is in its vegetation and its bountiful wildlife, a land where there are a million opportunities for the honest, truthful, and willing to help theirself in a good way of life. Sincerely, Harry Hughes.
Coal Sales Corporation, and the Alaska National Bank. We'll have the news in just a minute. Most people choose a bank according to its many fine qualities, and also its past experience, its participation in the community, helping it grow, and its desire to help people with their banking needs. Hometown Report.
Thank you, Don, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We would like first to acknowledge a letter we received today from the Fairbanks Composite Squadron of the Civil Air Patrol, wishing to thank all of the people who aided in the recent search for the Mark Stella plane, especially those people, pilots and non-pilots, who volunteered services as observers in the search planes. Any search requires as many experienced observers as it can possibly use to scan the terrain for a missing craft or persons. And the letter goes on to say, the more observers in a search craft, the more thoroughly the area may be searched. Anytime a search plane is without observers, it cuts down the effectiveness of the search. Appreciation goes out to Captain Bill Trapton of the State Police, both in the air and on the ground, to Jess Buckner and his crew of Fairbanks Air Service for their efficiency in refueling operations for all search planes. A great many commercial and private pilots had donated their aircraft and pilots to be thanked for their usual prompt action when notified that search was necessary. And another thanks has been acknowledged through the FCS of the CAP to all radio communications facilities.
And radio station KFRB, we're told to leave a public meeting of the Fairbanks City Council last night as the council went into a secret executive session. The secret session, called at the request of Councilman Darrell Brewington at the adjournment of the regular meeting, was called by one reporter, quote, an attempt to bar the public from meetings conducting public business, end quote. Mrs. Sylvia Ringstad, who objected to the reporter staying on after the public filed out, made a motion to this effect. She said, quote, I move that the press be excluded from this meeting, end quote. She told one reporter, quote, that it's no wonder some of these slimy things get into the paper sometimes, end quote. Councilman Ted Cox, referring to the reporters, said that it's, quote, not necessary to have them stay, end quote. The chief of police, Stan Zaverill, was asked to be present at the private session. Councilman Red Boucher asked that the minutes be kept of the secret session. Sorry, gentlemen, remarked Mayor Rebar as the reporters were ordered from the room. The city attorney last night reported briefly to the council on the matter of citizens suing government. He related several interesting quirks in the law and recent developments. Fairbanks may become the first municipality in the nation to pass a law outlining procedures whereby a citizen might sue the city. In other action last night, the council approved unanimously a license renewal from Wes Super, director of the Alaska Patrol System, a request of Alaska motor coaches for a bus stop at 2nd and Lacey in Fairbanks was tabled due to the fact that the Alaska Coachways has not yet been granted a master operator's license for 1962. Councilman Brewington requested the city manager to provide a progress report on the North Cushman Street right-of-way. Councilman Ted Cox asked that the City Council meet with local state representatives and local state senators before the legislature convenes to discuss mutual problems. Cliff Berglund, representing the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, asked that the chamber be included in any such meeting. The Council also approved Resolution 234 regarding taxation of interest on state and municipal bonds and expressed its strong opposition to the Treasury Department's attempt to tax the interest on state and municipal bonds. Mayor Rebar asked that William Stroker, Bob Gray, and Wayne White be reappointed as members of the Planning and Zoning Commission. They are the present members whose terms expired December 31st. At the request of Councilman Darrell Brewington, the appointments were tabled for 1 week for further consideration. The council also approved contracts for hospitalization of prisoners and emergency treatments between the city and St. Joseph's Hospital. The rates are the same as those for 1961, and the terms are about the same. Mayor Rebar expressed his satisfaction with the arrangement. Another item of discussion at last night's meetings was the state office buildings in Fairbanks. Governor William A. Egan said today that the state will open bids February the 15th for the lease of a new office building in Fairbanks. The bid invitations seek prices on both 20-year and 25-year leases for the building, which will contain 55,772 square feet of usable office and court space. The structure will be built with private capital. The four-story building would be used by the departments of law, public safety, revenue, natural resources, health and welfare, labor, fish and game, commerce, and administration, and the Alaska court system and the University of Alaska. In Juneau, Attorney General Ralph Moody says that George Hayes, State District Attorney for the 3rd Judicial Division at Anchorage, has resigned. General Manager Don Dickey of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce says it favors immediate repayment of the state's almost $9 million debt to the Federal Employment Security Fund. Governor Egan says his commissioners and division heads have full authority to discuss the activities of their departments and divisions with the public and the press. We'll be back with a look at the business news after this word from Trip Office Equipment.
Here's a little...
Ninth, 1962, news report on the activities of the City Council as of January the 9th, last night, Monday.
In Fairbanks. Representatives of the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, Jensen's Weekly, and radio station KFRB were told to leave a public meeting of the Fairbanks City Council last night as the council went into a secret executive session. The secret session, called at the request of Councilman Darrell Burlington at the adjournment of the regular meeting, was called by one reporter an attempt to bar the public from meetings conducting public business, unquote. Mrs. Sylvia Ringstam, who objected to the reporter staying on after the public filed out, made a motion to this effect. She said, and I quote, "I move that the press be excluded from this meeting," unquote. She told one reporter that, and I quote again, "It's no wonder some of these slimy things get into the paper sometimes," unquote. Councilman Ted Cox, referring to the reporter, said that, and I quote again, "It's not necessary to have them stay," unquote. "Sorry, gentlemen," remarked Mayor Rebar. As the reporters were ordered from the room, the chief of police, Stan Zaverill, was asked to be present at the secret meeting, and Councilman Red Balger requested that minutes be kept in the secret session. The city manager, Cliff Norby, made this statement this morning to a reporter with KFRB News regarding the closed session last night. He said, and I quote, "At an executive meeting of the council Monday, January the 8th, the operation duties of the Fairbanks Police Department were reviewed. This meeting was called to resolve the several complaints and many rumors noted by the council. As a result, the Fairbanks Police Department will strengthen its training program and will stress better public relations with the people of the city of Fairbanks," unquote. In other news of the day,
zoning and planning for the city of Fairbanks. Zoning is one of the ways, probably the most important way, that cities or communities can control the orderly development of the city. And it's the best way to stabilize the property values of the city.
When you talk about stabilizing property values, I imagine they also have quite a bit of effect on the appraisal values, don't they?
Oh, they certainly do. FHA is very interested in knowing the zoning of the area where they are contemplating insuring a loan.
I see it. Maybe this would be a good time, Mary, just to take a look at what some of the different types of zoning regulations there are, and what some of the different areas in Fairbanks, how are they zoned?
We have a map that is the zoning map for the city of Fairbanks. It shows all the zones that we have in the city. Heavy industrial.
That's brown, that dark area up on the upper portion of the map.
This is heavy industrial. There's a little bit here, some here, around here, in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
The light industrial is the hatched area,
mm-hmm,
here, in one spot. and Moosehead.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have commercial areas that you probably won't be able to tell much difference in the commercial areas here, because there really isn't much difference in our business class one, which is the up and down line,
mm-hmm.
and the business class two, which has the up and down lines and cross lines also. Now, the only difference in these two zones is in the fire requirements, quality of building that you must
have to have a higher standard
in business one, which is
mm-hmm.
here and here.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this although its zone is business or commercial, it still allows for residents in this type of an area. Are there any pertinent restrictions requiring that pertain to residents?
In a commercial area, only that you must build it with the fire requirements of a fire zone one, which makes a residential development in that area much more expensive. The same is true of the heavy industrial. Your fire requirements here are equally as stringent.
I see.
The other zones that we have are residential. The polka dot area is multiple residential. Here's more.
When you speak of multiple, you're thinking in terms of apartment type, large apartment.
Not
type.
Necessarily. It depends on the size of the lot. In a multiple residential zone, you may build as many units on your lot as you have multiples of 1,750 square feet. So that on a small lot, you couldn't build very many, even if you were zoned multiple residential. You would have to have a large area.
I see.
You are also required to have a parking space for each apartment and yard space just as great in multiple residential as in general residential, which, by the way, everything that isn't colored on here at all is general residential. The blocks that are only outlined, these, are restricted residential.
Mm-hmm.
And in these, there's one other zone I haven't mentioned that has the polka dots, the circles. We only have three. These are related to residential because they are neighborhood shopping zones.
I see.
And are there only because of residential development.
I see. When you speak of this restricted residential area, Mary, what are the restrictions on that type of an area?
In restricted residential, the yard requirements are a little more stringent than in general residential. You may have only one living unit unless you have the written permission of all your neighbors within 400 feet.
I see, which is...
Otherwise, it's quite similar to general residential.
In other words, there could be apartments in such dwellings, but...
You may have an apartment in a dwelling.
Single apartment.
It still looks like a residence.
Residence, I see. How does a community or an area go about initiating changes in zoning regulations?
Change in zoning regulations may be initiated by any citizen in the city who, if you wish to have an area changed, let's say this one.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose he wanted this block changed to something else.
Mm-hmm.
He would circulate a petition among his neighbors in that block. And if he had the signatures of 51% of the property, the owners of 51% of the property, he would present it to the Planning Commission through the Planning Office. A public hearing would be advertised and held, and the people within 300 feet, not counting streets, of this block would be notified by mail, and they could appear at the public hearing. It's advertised in the newspaper, and all citizens of the city can appear at any public hearing.
I see. So making any changes in this existing regulation is certainly a democratic process.
Oh,
all
yes.
From the beginning to end.
Although it is not just because the people vote that they would like this changed, it still must they must prove to the commission and to the city council that this change is for the good of the city.
That it's important and good for the whole city.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How do you enforce, or how does the city enforce zoning regulations as they exist?
Mainly through the building department of the city of Fairbanks. Building permits are not issued unless they conform to the zoning in the city.
And meet certain
yes.
code requirements and so on. Is there, I guess there's no way that zoning regulations can extend beyond the city limits.
Not in Alaska. There are in many other states.
But this is this might be a possibility that a borough government or a borough organization might be concerned.
Yes, this is one of the things that the borough legislation takes into account in the last legislature.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think certainly this points out some areas that are extremely important, Mary, that it is important to have zoning to improve your city and attract residents to an area. I imagine that the city of Fairbanks has a long-range plan for development.
Well, yes. The city of Fairbanks has had a comprehensive plan since 1952.
I see. And how often is such a plan revised? Or?
Well, it is not a static thing at all. It is revised constantly. Actually, the printed comprehensive plan has been revised once, and this happens when the community feels that it's necessary to have a new picture of the city, a tangible picture.
I see. And then in such a plan, you plan for changes that might be necessary from industrial to, or perhaps the other way, from residential to industrial use, and you plan for development of more school facilities and this type of thing.
Yes.
I see.
And you must project the expected population growth of the area and what will be needed to serve this population.
I see. Can you point out any trends in the direction that the population seems to be moving or concentrating in the Fairbanks area itself?
Well, in the past 10 years and probably in the next 10 years, it will be extending out Airport Way and probably even beyond the city limits. And this section will undoubtedly be opened up partly for residential. This is under the Division of Lands of the state.
State Division of Lands, but there are provisions for possibly incorporating this into the city limits and zoning it along with some of the other.
For zoning reasons, we hope that it will be incorporated in the city. This is one of the main differences between inside and outside the city in Alaska. Because inside the city, you can feel fairly confident if you build a beautiful home that next door to you there will be another beautiful home and not a machine shop or a garage or.
So one thing that's particularly important about zoning, it allows you to concentrate one type of structure in an area, or like you say, a nice home.
Or one type of use.
Yes, one type of use, which is very, very important. I think that's is easy to notice as you do drive around the Fairbanks area, like you say, seeing many different types of houses situated next to each other. Well, I think we certainly appreciate having you with us on this program this evening, Mary. I'm sure that this will give the folks a better idea of what zoning is and how it may be initiated, some of the things that it can do to improve the area of Fairbanks, the city of Fairbanks. And the next program that we have in this housing series will be on construction problems in permafrost areas. Mr. Fred Kitsey, who is manager of the Corps of Engineers Permafrost Research Station on Farmers Loop Road, will be our guest on the program for this evening. That's a week from tonight, 5:15, January 21st.
You have just seen a program on housing in the Tenenbaum Valley presented by the Golden Valley Electric Association. Join us next Sunday at 5:15 for more information on housing in the Tenenbaum Valley.
Conducted last night's meeting in the absence of Mayor Joseph Rebar. First on the agenda, due to a slight misunderstanding, the city of Fairbanks could try to take title to the Chena building. A letter from Mr. C.W. Snedden, president of the Guarantee Investment Corporation and also publisher of the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, was presented to the council last night. Mr. Snedden stated that obviously a misunderstanding existed between his company and city manager Clifford Nordby regarding collection of dates and penalties on real property tax levies. Mr. Snedden asked the City Council for a decision as to whether or not the Guarantee Investment Corporation must pay penalty and interest assessments imposed. He closed by saying that if, quote, your decision should be that we are to pay the charges assessed, will you notify our company promptly so that payments can be made before the city takes title to our property on January 31st, end quote. The property in question is the Big Chena building in the 500 block of 2nd Avenue in downtown Fairbanks. The matter was tabled 1 week pending a report from the city manager. Last night's meeting was anything but dull, with words flying and tempers flaring. The city department heads remained conspicuously absent, which brought this comment from one citizen. Maybe somebody's been asking too many questions. A side comment overheard at last night's meeting was that city employees are so jumpy these days that they won't allow anyone to take them out to lunch. One employee turned down a free lunch from a traveling salesman who was trying to sell something to the city. Another hot topic of discussion was a request by the Polaris building for additional winter parking spaces. The Polaris now has approximately 16 units. They requested an additional 25. The Polaris pays the city $50 per month for the 16 units they now have. Councilman wanted to know how much they're charging the tenants for the space now. Councilman Darrell Brewington moved that the matter be tabled and that the city manager be instructed to obtain the necessary information from the Polaris building manager. The council approved an increase in telephone directory advertising rates due to an increased circulation which will exceed 13,000 copies. They also approve municipal utilities action, which will mean that the utility deposits will be returned to reliable persons after 3 years instead of the present five. Mrs. Sylvia Ringstad criticized the manner of snow removal, creating uneven walking areas, and requested the city manager to correct the situation. She also blasted what she called, quote, eager beaver newspaper reporters at the Wednesday afternoon meetings, who, she said, release information before it is fact. Councilman Darrell Brewington really set the meeting into orbit last night when he sharply criticized changes in specifications of buildings under construction exceeding $1,000 without consulting the council. He strongly hinted that the council wasn't aware of what changes were taking place, and he said that when a change in specifications amounting to more than $1,000 took place, that the entire council should be made aware of it. Councilman Red Boucher answered Brewington by saying, quote, I resent Mr. Brewington indicating that the rest of the council is not cognizant of everything that he knows. Boucher strongly emphasized the word cognizant, a word which Brewington uses frequently. An explosive exchange between Boucher and Brewington followed. Boucher, obviously angry, said, quote, there's a hell of a lot of things that the council knows that they don't tell. And Brewington replied, quote, if Mr. Boucher thinks he can stop a councilman from thinking, he's sadly mistaken, end quote. Boucher said, quote, I don't object to your thinking, just make sure it's your own thinking, end quote. At one point in the exchange, Brewington raised halfway out of his chair and roared, quote, don't tell me what I said, end quote. Councilman Tom Roberts, sitting between the two, commented, quote, fellas, be careful, I'm in the middle, end quote. And Mrs. Ringstad, speaking to Mr. Roberts, said, quote, you're the one who needs to be careful, end quote, meaning that he might find a safer seat elsewhere. In less dramatic action, the council delayed appointments of members to the various boards and commissions until Mayor Rebar's return. They advanced two rezoning ordinances from first to second readings and adopted resolution number 235 regarding establishing equalization and delinquency dates for 1962 property taxes. The date set was May 15th. A transfer of a liquor license from Jarrett's, doing business as the Bottle Shop, to James Alvis, doing business as the Bottle Shop, was tabled 1 week after a stormy discussion. The discussion centered around the desirability of locating another liquor dealer on 2nd Avenue. Councilman Tom Roberts took a stand against what a police report termed the, quote, antagonistic and insulting attitude of Mr. Alvis, end quote. The police report said that on one occasion that Mr. Alvis had refused to make a phone call summoning aid for a police officer on foot who had two arrested men in his custody and no way to transport them to jail. Councilman Red Boucher said that he didn't think it was against the law for a man to refuse to make a phone call. The city attorney says it was a citizen's duty to aid in law enforcement. The city manager in his report said that the school district budget for 1962 and 63 had been received and that it was to be $990,000. He said the final inspection of five
stocks, but make it back in taxes. This is Sidney Walton, editor-in-chief of Profit Research, publishers of over a million plain talk books on money. If that's what you'd like to make and keep much more of, get a pencil and paper and make a note on some of these new straight-from-the-shoulder money angles.
These are some excerpts from the Rose Parade on January 1st in Pasadena, California. And I will record some of the conversation.
And, of course, you see the girls standing there under those beautiful canopies. There is a fountain. And right there at the bow, you can see going underneath the bridge, the gondola with the gondolier. Young lady in the gondola. Typical, of course, of the beautiful Italian city. That candy-striped pole standing there is a barber pole in America, but over there they use them to tie the gondolas to it. I was grammatically incorrect in that, but I think I got the meaning out. This is really a float of beauty. It's in mostly lavender and white. Beautiful red roses back around the pagodas where you see the white swans. And again, the thing that we've so often repeated in here, all that filigree work, all those little strains of water are all made of blossoms and petals of flowers.
And sometimes the flowers aren't added until 48 hours before the parade, so the crews most of the time stay up all night to finish the beautiful floral arrangement.
Many of them, where the petals are put on, of course, are done with glue. They stand up with a bucket of glue and a bucket of flower blossoms or petals, gluing each individual petal or flower. Here comes a marching band now, and another one from a long way away, as you can read there. This one is from Abington, Pennsylvania, the Township Senior High School Band. Fine band following those attractive drum majorettes, making their first appearance in the Rose Parade. Conductors Nelson Gable and Leo Award is assistant. There are over 100 in the band, 8 majorettes, 2 drum majors. Let's go down and listen to them.
On the council action of last night, this is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4.